Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, why having a job is a hedge against domestic violence. Dr. Ludi Green, founder of Second Chance Employment Services, talks about breaking the underreported cycle of physical abuse and economic captivity. Also today, more sound from the archives as we continue to celebrate WNYC's 90th birthday. Today, New York's master builder, Robert Moses, circa 1953.
There must be people who are discommoded, inconvenienced, or call it what you will, on the old theory that you can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs.
We'll also hear from his master critic, urbanist Jane Jacobs, who wonders 10 years later, what has Moses wrought? And a call in today on how you're using the extra daylight during these longest days of the year. Plus, we'll see how the Brooklyn DA may have just legalized a lot of marijuana in the borough. Is Brooklyn the new Colorado by a statement of the Brooklyn DA? But first, why teenagers today may grow up conservative. That's the provocative headline on New York Times data cruncher David Leonhardt's new article. He joins us now. Hi, David. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good morning.
And I should say right off the bat that this is not just about the future, but very much about the past. You did a historical data crawl of when different generations were teenagers and what kinds of politics they came to hold as adults. Tell us what you were looking for.
Well, so there's this cliche, right, that the young are liberal and the older conservative. And I compared it to a stopped clock because sometimes it's accurate. Now happens to be one of those times. But it is actually a mostly useless cliche. It is not the case that people tend to start out liberal and become conservative over their lives. Instead, it tends to be the case that generations have distinct political identities. Which is to say that a generation starts off liberal or conservative and actually tends to remain that way. Not everybody in it, but it leans one way or the other. And my colleague Amanda Cox, one of our great graphics editors here at the Times and at the Upshot, did this interactive that I think people would enjoy playing with, in which you can go check every year since 1937 what the political views of white Americans have been. The political views of black Americans tend to be much more constant.
And I want to tell our listeners, folks, you can follow along on our webpage. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show, where we link to that Times graphic that shows generational politics over the generations and really year by year, depending on the year of your birth. So, again, follow along at WNYC.org. Click as we link to this prediction about the future based on a data crawl about the past from David Leonhardt's Upshot column in the New York Times and the graph from his colleague Amanda Cox. And, David, go ahead.
So what you see is that the political conditions when people are somewhere between 14 and 24, and there's nothing magical about that, somewhere between when they start to become conscious of politics, when they start to vote, their early 20s, have a huge impact on people. So people who came of age during FDR and Truman, that generation leaned Democratic its whole life. People who came of age during Eisenhower, that generation leaned Republican. And you can understand, to come up to the present, why people who came of age at the end of the Clinton presidency, which was quite popular, or who came of age during the George W. Bush presidency, which was quite unpopular, or who came of age during the incredible excitement around Barack Obama's election, you can see why that generation would lean so strongly Democratic. But it's worth remembering that we're not that far from having voters who will not remember the 2008 election, who will not remember the George W. Bush presidency. And instead, someone who's turning 18 in 2016, or certainly 2020, they may be coming of age when they look around and they say, wow, things aren't that great in this country. The economy's kind of disappointing. We've got all these problems overseas. Huh, and we have a Democratic president. Why isn't he making the situation better? And it doesn't automatically mean there will be Republicans. But I do think there is reason to think that today's 16-year-olds may be more skeptical of the Democratic Party than today's 25-year-olds.
So, listeners, let's do the anecdotal version of this with you in historical terms. What was happening in the world when you were a teenager, and how do you think it shaped your politics? 212-433-WNYC. WNYC. If you're a 20-something right now, we want to hear from you about what was going on 10 years ago or even fewer years ago. 30-somethings, 40-somethings, 212-433-WNYC. Please call in. Xers, boomers, and depression-era folks, you too. 212-433-9692. What was happening in the world when you were a teenager, and how did it shape your politics ever since? If it did, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For David Leonhardt from the New York Times, whose blog Upshot does a lot of the data crunching pieces, some really brilliant stuff for the New York Times these days. David, I wonder about your premise, though, that teens see things today as so bad under Obama. I mean, he took office at the low point of the financial crisis and recession, as you know, and the curve has been up ever since, even if slowly and frustratingly, in terms of jobs and wages. But it's not 2008 anymore. It's not 2009 anymore. Why not look at it that way? My analogy of the day is maybe Bush was Brazil in the World Cup, humiliated global powerhouse, and Obama is the United States. Hasn't made it all the way yet, but fighting our way up through the many obstacles. You see any merit in that?
I do, and I don't mean to suggest that it is baked in the cake that 16-year-olds are going to be Republican, for two reasons. One is what you say, which is I ended the column with a few paragraphs explaining why Obama's second term is so important. It's not only important on the substantive level of whether the health care law works out matters for health care and people's lives, and whether he affects climate change matters for the climate, and whether the economy gets better matters for the economy. But it will matter for decades of how people tend to think of his presidency, and thus it will affect their votes for a long time. And so if Obama's approval rating right now is not so good, right, it's hovering around 40%.
It also goes in two directions, because some of those young liberals who voted for Obama think he's not liberal enough, think he's not progressive enough or not tough enough in those directions. It doesn't mean they're all becoming Tea Partiers.
No, that's right, especially in New York, right? A heavily Democratic city.
I've noticed.
New York has a lot of liberals who want the Democratic Party to be more liberal. So that's right. So I do think that Obama's presidency, he did an enormous amount, particularly in the first 2 years of his first term. I do think there is a substantial chance that people will look back on it as quite successful, and that will have a big impact. The other thing, of course, is the Republican Party is grappling with all kinds of issues, gay rights, attitudes toward Latinos and Asian Americans, and climate change, that I think could be disqualifying issues for a lot of young people. My point is twofold, though. One, we shouldn't imagine that things in politics are permanent. Young people are liberal today. They were also in the 1960s, and then things can change, right? Young people were quite conservative in the 1980s when I was growing up. People born in my year, 1973, white people lean quite Republican. I think white people lean Republican enough my birth year that the whole population from 1973 is slightly Republican. And the second thing is that we have some deep, deep economic challenges. We don't even fully understand them. It's been 15 years since our economy was fully strong. And the Democratic Party is in this funny position. The good news for it is it's the majority party right now. It's much better to be in the majority party than the minority party. But the tricky thing about that is it's the majority party at a time when the country is struggling somewhat. And I don't think that voters will forever say, oh, they're the majority party, the country is struggling, but we don't blame them for that. That was the point I was trying to make.
All right, listeners. When were you born? How do you think the events of the world in your teenage years have shaped your politics ever since? If you're in your 20s, call us. If you're in your 30s, call us. 40-somethings, 50-somethings, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And sure, 100-plus, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. Mark in Rockaway, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I'm 25 years old, and when me and my friends were younger, 7th and 8th grade, most of us, was when September 11th happened, and we were too young to understand politics at that point. But once we started to get older and with the war in Iraq and all of that and Afghanistan, we did not agree with that, so we tended to lean more towards the side of the Democratic Party. And now that's about what we...
Uh-oh. All right. Mark's phone deteriorated, and then it disappeared altogether. But David Leonhardi opened a big ball of wax there, which is how has 9/11 affected the politics of people who were kids or, let's say, teenagers at that time? Have you done any data crunching on that? Can it be disaggregated from everything that's been going on economically since then?
I think it's hard. I would encourage readers to go on and do it themselves. And if you find something about 9/11 that we didn't notice, let us know. Tweet at both the radio show and at me about it. But I think it's hard to disentangle 9/11 from what followed, and particularly from Iraq. Because I do think you can imagine a scenario in which 9/11 creates a generation of young people who are quite supportive in a rally around the flag way of the Republican Party. But what followed was an invasion of Iraq that was widely seen as a disaster and as a diversion from 9/11, and an economic crisis under a Republican president. And you can have a debate about how much blame George W. Bush deserved for those things. But I think because of those things, it's hard to see much of a 9/11 effect as distinct from the things that followed 9/11.
It's interesting because I think right after 9/11, there was an assumption, or at least a guess, on the part of a lot of people that it would make a lot of Americans more conservative, that they would become security hawks, for example. But that was before the disaster of the Iraq War.
Yep, that's exactly right.
KB,
Fairness, both the Bush and the Obama administration have been very successful in preventing further terrorist attacks, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that probably hawks would say, well, that's not fair. It's like Ruth Bader Ginsburg's great line about just because you're not getting wet, you don't put your umbrella away. But that's probably affected public opinion as well.
KB in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hello, KB.
Hey, how's it going, Brian?
Good.
That's good. That's good. Like I was telling your screener, I grew up in the ages of with the first Bush presidency and then the Clinton presidency.
So you're how old? This is one of those segments where you have to disclose your age. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I am 37. Just had a birthday.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
Thank you. So I didn't get to vote for Clinton, but I saw everything that was going on. And, like, I was neither conservative or liberal as I was growing up. It was just, you know, whatever you needed, if the government could help, awesome. If it couldn't, then you had to figure it out yourself. But I noticed that the Democrats were leaning towards helping people who needed help. And the Republicans were just like, nah, I'm just not going to help people who won't pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. And so that kind of like pushed me away from the conservative idea. Like, I'm sorry, everybody doesn't have the same opportunities in America. Yeah, we're all on an equal playing field when we start out, but about 10, 15 years into it, it's not equal anymore. So some people just need help. And it always seemed to me that the conservatives and the Republicans always wanted to keep the way the country was, whereas the Democrats and the liberals, who of course want the Democrats to be more liberal, were trying to bring the country into the current state of the rest of the world. Like, this is something that we need to do, not only for our citizens, but for the benefit of the world. And it didn't always work out, but at the very least, that seemed to be the idea behind it. And the Republicans always seem to be against that.
And the things that you saw going on in your lifetime, particularly your teen years, as you were saying, end of Clinton, beginning of Bush, that contrast for you set you on a more liberal democratic course. KB, thank you. And let's get a contrast from Bruce in Manhattan, 53 years old. Right, Bruce?
Yes, correct.
Hi.
How are you? Yeah, so the defining issue for me in the 1980 presidential election, there was a third party candidate, John Anderson, and I voted for him because Jimmy Carter decided to reinstitute Selective Service. And I was 19 years old, and that was the only issue for me. I was not going to tolerate a potential draft. And even though I was virulently against Ronald Reagan, I figured maybe Anderson has a chance. And I voted later for Nader.
And it's funny how things change, because at that time, I presume that you saw reinstituting the draft as a conservative thing out of the Vietnam War era. Now it's a liberal thing, championed by people like Charles Rangel, for the sake of spreading the risk around evenly, having seen the economic draft that's taken the place of the old conscription.
Well, I understand that, and it's interesting because I guess I'm very divided myself, because even though I agree with Rangel, I also put myself first. I've always, you know, I'm proudly selfish, I guess.
And if you're 53, maybe you have kids who would be susceptible to the draft if there was one again.
Well, I don't, but I just, as long, now that I'm no longer of draft age, but I'm still against it.
Yeah. Bruce, thank you. I'm going to leave that there. Let's go to another caller. Omesh in the Bronx. Omesh, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How old are you?
I am 30 years old.
And?
And I would say that 9/11 sort of helped shape my political sort of leanings. Before, I was actually in high school at the time, and I was largely politically unaware, but I was sort of almost leaning conservative because I'd read some pieces about Bill O'Reilly, and they sort of put him in this awesome light, and I was starting to like almost respect him. And then 9/11 happened, and I got all this sort of racial flack from conservatives. They just really piled it on, and sometimes I would like be scared to walk around, and it really got crazy. And like friends, parents of mine would start to give me flack even. So I just sort of discovered my own progressive nature by having to like explain the nuance of my race, because I'm not Muslim, right? I was actually raised Hindu, so. Uh-huh. So.
But
yeah.
And you came under peer pressure. It sounds like hard to be a conservative in the Bronx.
No, not really. Actually, it's very easy to be conservative in the Bronx in some areas.
Omesh, thank you very much.
I think race is a really important part of this.
I was just going to say that. Go ahead. Because really, your historical timeline is, you know, it's for a very demographically limited group. It's really for white Christians, because blacks and Latinos and Muslims and white Jews all seem pretty consistently liberal over time, right? So who are you really measuring here?
So we measured in this interactive I talked about, we measured whites. We didn't do the underlying research. So I should say the researchers measured whites. We showed their research for two reasons. One, back in the 20th century, when we were a less diverse country, some of the survey data did not distinguish among non-whites. So it didn't really distinguish between Latinos and African Americans in a way that they were able to tease out. But the second reason is that the political views of whites, as I mentioned before, change more. It's true the political views of Jews don't change that much, but Jews are only 2% of this country, so they don't affect the numbers that much. Whereas the political views of African Americans are much more consistent. One of the big questions, you could argue it is the big question about American politics, is what path do our two fastest growing groups, Latinos and Asian Americans, follow? Do they follow the path of Irish and Italian immigrants, who started out heavily Democratic and then became increasingly Republican or increasingly swing? Or do they follow the path of African Americans and Jews who have remained loyal Democratic voters even as they have become higher income? And I think for a long time it was reasonable to expect that Latinos and Asian Americans would follow the path of Irish and Italians, that as they got higher income, they would become more swing and more Republican. It's what Ronald Reagan expected, as I mentioned in my column. But so far, it's not happening. By overwhelming numbers, Latinos and Asian Americans voted for the Democrats in 2012 and 2008. And it seems to be because a large segment of the population, anyone who isn't white, and large numbers of white people as well, like the caller just mentioned, are so turned off by the Republican Party's attitude toward any issues of diversity that they just feel like they can't vote for the Republicans. And that is a huge issue.
We are talking with David Leonhardt, New York Times Upshot columnist. Upshot is their data crunching blog. If you're just joining us, David Leonhardt with us talking about the article that appeared originally in yesterday's paper and online with the headline, "Why Today's Teenagers May Grow Up Conservative." And we're taking your calls, since this includes a historical timeline going way, way back to the early 20th century, of when people were born and how their politics turned out. So if you want to see that graph, we've linked to it. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Really interesting data graphics from David Leonhardt and his Upshot team at the Times. 212-4 is our phone number, 212-433-WNYC. But go to our website, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and follow along with this fascinating timeline as we continue to take calls from some of you of different ages on when you were born and how you think what was going on in your teen years has shaped your politics ever since. Anne in Hell's Kitchen, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Brian. Hi, David. I'm 61, and I think less than what happened when I was a teenager and more of where I grew up and the time I grew up. I was in rural southern Louisiana during the Jim Crow, and I had a very prejudiced father and a very liberal mother, and I went with my mom politically, and I've been a Yellow Dog Democrat ever since. I think the Solid South, which was when I was born, that breaking up had a lot to do with me being a Democrat, and I'd be curious to see what David says about that.
So you said, so I'm trying to do the math here quickly. You said you're 61, right?
I was born in 53. We were a very vocal political family.
Yes, and I do think, and I think you're, so I'm actually pulling up the chart as we talk. So yeah, you come from a quite Democratic cohort. And I don't want to suggest that your personal experiences didn't affect your politics. Of course they did, more than no doubt some national trends. What's interesting is how similar different personal people's different personal experiences can be depending on their year. So if you were born, you're born in the early 50s, you start to come of age in the mid-60s, right? You start to come of age at a time when the civil rights legislation is ascendant.
Yeah.
Maybe your first memories are the glamour of JFK. And then
actually Stevenson running.
And Stevenson. And then JFK. I don't know if it's the glamour of Stevenson, though. Maybe he had other qualities.
No, it was the Catholic Kennedy.
Stevenson, you were 3 years old.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead, David.
So then you think about those years, right? And then, of course, there's the disappointments and the tragedy of Vietnam under LBJ. But that didn't push a lot of young people to the right, particularly because it was followed by Nixon. And so that's why it would make sense that when you look at people born in 1953, whites born in 1953, and not just whites, it is a strongly Democratic, for a long time was a strongly Democratic year. Now, it did come back somewhat during the 80s. I think the 80s did change a lot of people's minds. I mentioned the character Alex P. Keaton from Family Ties in the column, right? The conservative kid of the 80s who is the son of hippie parents. So it's not that these things never change, but those early experiences leave a trace for a generation's entire life.
And thank you very much. Did something change between people born in 54 and people born in 55, the 2 years after Anne? It just jumped out at us that there seemed to be a little spike in Republicanism up from around just under 50% Republican to about 53% Republican between those born in 54 and those born in 55. Is that a meaningful number at all?
You're completely right about that, and I hadn't noticed it, I'll be honest. I wish Amanda Cox were on the call with me because she spent more time with this data than I did year by year. But we'll try to get an answer to that. I mean, you're right. You can come up with all kinds of theories for why people born in the late 50s would be more conservative than people born in the early 50s. It's the stuff we were just talking about. But you're right. There's that interesting break. You can really see a change between 54 and 55. That I don't immediately have an answer
okay.
for that feels solid.
Sonia in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sonia.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to share that I am 31. Some of the earliest memories I have being aware of politics were of Clinton being impeached, and as you'd mentioned, this general sense that things were going well at the time, but then there was a Republican Party that was sort of being obstructionist and trying to take things down, and then during Al Gore election, him speaking to issues that resonated with me environmentally more than other parties. But I also wanted to say that I really appreciate this segment because I have a very close relationship with my grandparents who are 91 and 93.
Ah.
And they've always supported my being liberal, very much so, because they speak a lot about the time in when they were 19, 20, 21, having memories of the Great Depression, and then thinking of FDR as someone who really changed the country, you know, talking about life before before Social Security insurance and after, and what that looked like. And I know that that's had a huge impact on the way that they have voted and that they have voted Democrat their entire lives, because they're so, you know, that change was so real to them, and the effects of the FDR presidency had such a great impact on their lives.
How, that's a great story, and I want to follow up on it with David in just a second. But coming of age during the Clinton impeachment, and you say, yeah, things were good then, things were economically good in the country in the late 90s, but how do you recall the impeachment itself landing with you? Because it was so insane, you know?
Yeah.
No matter which side you were on, it was just insane and fraught and contentious and, you know,
and
hyperbolically dramatic.
In every news outlet, and you couldn't get away from it. And I remember very much feeling as though, you know, knowing a little bit historically about some presidents and past affairs and being in the American history class in high school at the time and thinking, this kind of thing has happened before. Why is it such a big deal now? And that's when I think I got the impression a lot more that it was more about a conservative party trying to tarnish the reputation and impact of this presidency than about anything that, you know, really meant something in terms of, you know, an affair or sexual relations having an impact on policy. And I remember just feeling angry about that.
Right. And you don't even bring up lying under oath, which is what the Republicans kept coming back to. But Sonia, thank you very much for talking about you and your grandparents. And to the point about her 90 and 91-year-old grandparents coming of age during the Depression, your timeline seems to indicate that anyone who grew up under FDR or Truman tended to become liberals for life. That was five presidential terms. So despite the decade-long depression that FDR presided over, followed by a world war, people didn't follow what seems to be your hypothesis about Obama's struggling economy equals teenage rejection of the sitting president's party. How come?
Well, I think a few things are going on. One, it was a less partisan time. So FDR had support from the not a huge amount of it, but he had support from the opposition party, in part because at the time there were liberal Republicans from the Northeast who were functionally Democrats. But it's also, this is the odd curse of Obama. He helped prevent a depression.
Yeah.
Remember, FDR took over, 3.5 years after the stock market crash of 1929?
Yeah.
Obama took over 3.5 months after the collapse of Lehman Brothers. And so FDR is grappling with unemployment of 25% and bringing it way down. Obama and the Federal Reserve kept things from ever getting that bad. Now, having said that, I don't think, as we talked about earlier, I don't think it's fated that young people will see the Obama presidency as a failure by any means. I just think it's worth focusing on the fact that just because young people are liberal now doesn't mean they will be forever. And the Democratic Party, starting with Hillary Clinton and Obama, have this challenge, which is our economy isn't functioning all that well right now. And if they are the majority party in presidential elections, they will eventually be called to account for that situation in all likelihood.
David Leonhardt's Upshot blog on the New York Times and the article that hit yesterday called Why Today's Teenagers May Grow Up Conservative. And you can go to our page to link to their fascinating data graphics, this timeline that goes back about 100 years that matches up when people were born to what their politics tend to be in adult life. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show for that. David, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And coming up next, why having a job is a hedge against domestic violence. Stay tuned.